It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Welcome to what may be a new era of ever so slightly higher fuel prices. I didn't read it well. Take nine. Welcome to what may be a new era of ever so slightly higher fuel prices. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Members of the oil producers cartel OPEC are gathering tomorrow for their twice yearly meeting. For people who produce oil for a living, it could be an upbeat gathering with oil prices that could soon hit double what they were earlier this year. But will this last? Marketplace's Jed Kim takes a look.
Oil prices started tumbling 18 months ago when OPEC decided not to cut production. Saudi Arabia was playing a long game to drive out U.S. shale oil. Jason Bordoff teaches global energy policy at Columbia University.
I think their perspective would be that the strategy is working. U.S. oil production has fallen about 1 million barrels a day. A lot of investment in high-cost sources of oil supply have been delayed or deferred, and the price is recovering.
Partly because of lower supply. Analysts now project higher oil prices for the rest of the year and even higher next year. How much of that can be attributed to the Saudi strategy?
It's no act of any producer. It's an act of terrorists and an act of Mother Nature.
Philip Verleger is an independent energy economist. He's referring to attacks on pipelines in Nigeria and the recent wildfire in Canada, things you can't plan for.
It is just as likely that we could see some surprises on the demand side or supply side going forward.
One thing you can bank on, if prices get high enough, U.S. pumping will begin again in earnest. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
Now, it's not just the cuckoo clock, chocolate, and semi-transparent banking. The Swiss are also really good at tunnels. Today, the longest tunnel on the planet is opening, surpassing one in Japan. It's through the Alps and is so long that if they ever let you stroll through it, it would take about 14 hours to get from end to end. But it's not for hiking. Imogen Folks, a reporter for our partner broadcaster, the BBC, was at one end of the $12 billion, 35-mile-long Gotthard Base Tunnel when we linked up this morning.
The tunnel will be a key element in a high-speed rail link, which will run all the way from the big port of Rotterdam in the Netherlands down to the big Italian port of Genoa. So you see a very key link in Europe's freight transport network.
And it's argued that there are environmental benefits to this large project?
That's one of the key reasons that this tunnel got built at all. The Swiss voted in a referendum to move all heavy freight off the roads and onto the rails. And the reason was their alpine valleys have been clogged with these huge mammoth trucks. 1 million trucks pass through this particular valley every single year. So you can imagine the effect: air pollution, noise pollution, a fragile alpine environment with glaciers, which we know are melting, and a loss of flora and fauna every single year. The environment was a key issue, especially for the alpine communities.
Now, Imogen, you can't bicycle or walk through the thing. It's for trains, right?
You can be a passenger. It's not just for freight. It will make a journey, for example, from Zurich to Milan, which typically now takes about 4 hours, reduce it down to less than 2.5, which tunnel fans and railway fans are pointing out is faster than flying, if you know you count the check-in times, which seems to get longer every time we all go to the airport.
Indeed. The BBC's Imogen Folks in Switzerland. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's the longest, but also the deepest tunnel in the world, we're told. In many states, if you needed food stamps, you had to show that you were working or volunteering. That was before the Great Recession. That rule was lifted during the extended downturn in many places. But now that the economy is improving, certain states are again requiring people to show they are working. And as Wilson Sayre from WLRN in Miami reports, that is causing hardship.
Every night, Lucy Perry sleeps on the sidewalks of downtown Miami.
Now, under this bridge, we've been here about a year under this bridge. For years, Perry got $194 in food stamps per month, the highest amount allowed under the program called SNAP, or Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. But in March, it stopped coming.
Because now I'm having to go out here and ask people for help, you know, just to eat. And that's embarrassing as hell. I hate it. I hate being out here.
350,000 people in Florida have lost their food stamps, just like Perry. Leah McGivern is with Legal Services of Greater Miami and represents Perry and other people in her situation pro bono.
I saw an email about it and I was like, oh, work requirements. And then when I started looking into it, I was like, oh, this is going to be a real mess.
What happened was letters went out to places like homeless shelters explaining benefits were now tied to work requirements. A lot of people said they didn't get the letters. People who did had the option of sending in a doctor's note showing they were unable to work. But a lot of people didn't have doctors, let alone notes. That's where McGivern got involved.
I mean, that we're talking about $194 in food stamps. You have legal services attorneys involved. Just to get a note from a doctor to an agency saying that a homeless person is too disabled to work.
The Department of Children and Families, which administers the program, declined several requests for an interview. The agency sent a written statement saying it properly notified people of the coming changes back in December, and anyone who thinks they should be exempt from the work requirements should contact the agency. McGivern says all this has led to a really dire situation.
It's terrible to get a call from a desperate person being like, I literally have no money for food. You know, it's terrible.
McGivern managed to help Perry get her food stamps back, but he's pushing forward with the challenge of the state's implementation of the work requirements using Lucy Perry as a test case. In Miami, I'm Wilson Sayre for Marketplace.
Marketplace's Wealth and Poverty team has launched a podcast about the changing welfare landscape. It's called The Uncertain Hour. The host is Marketplace's Chrissy Clark. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.